Talk Shoe. Recorded live.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Talking Twilight Zone.
Oh, this just came special delivery. You can look at it on the plane.
I adore presents. Let the plane wait. Please accept the enclosed as a token of affection of your fan club in Howardville. Do you know where Howardville is?
Doesn't everybody?
You'll see it if you look down. We fly right over the center of town.
Well, hooray for us.
Howardville happens to be my hometown, and my loyalist fans are still there. Do you know, I couldn't have gotten here if it hadn't been for them. They actually took up a collection to pay my fare to Hollywood.
What'd they send you, the key to the local still?
Well, let's find out.
You find out. I'm gonna get this ice down to the car.
I'm so anxious to see everybody, all my old friends and all.
You picked the right day for it. You remember the Founders Day picnic.
How could I forget it? The year I won the beauty pageant was what really got me started.
Well, the picnic is this afternoon. Everyone in town will be there.
Picnic?
Of course you'll come.
Picnic?
Bud and I have to go. I'm on the food committee and he's a lifeguard.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. This is your young old friend Ben Braden, Howardville's answer to Arthur Godfrey, bringing you the news, weather, and a very special hello to you, Bunny Blake, wherever you are. Bunny, please come home. We need you.
I wonder what tomorrow has in mind for me, or am I even in its mind at all? Perhaps I'll get a chance to look up. Soon as I find myself a crystal ball, soon as I find myself a crystal ball. Well, tell me where I'm going. I don't know where I've been. Tell me, won't you tell me and then tell me again? My heart is breaking, my body's aching, and I don't know where to go. So tell me, won't you tell me? I just gotta know. So many things I need to know. So many things I've gotta know.
To lie in bed on rainy nights and call to each other when we were kids.
Fun, wasn't it, being kids?
It was very good.
Like it's starting to rain a little.
We'll just have to brave it. I've got an audience waiting.
Well, I'll get some raincoats.
Oh, no, sis. You're going in style.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is your captain speaking. We're running into a little rough weather, so fasten your seatbelts, please. It might be a little bumpy.
It's gonna get rough. Scared, honey?
Nah. Isn't everyone?
I will remember you. Will you remember me? Don't let your love pass you by. Weep not for.
I've never seen anything like it.
Jim, will you please tell me what you're talking about?
The plane crash. Happened just a few minutes ago.
What crash?
passenger jet, L.A. to New York.
That storm just tore it apart. It landed right in the middle of the picnic grounds. Hildy, your sister, Bunny.
Bunny's dead, Hildy.
Dead? Why, that's crazy.
She was a passenger on that plane. She and another woman were sitting right next to each other.
I just saw him.
Goodbye, blue sky. Goodbye, blue sky. Goodbye. Goodbye.
Open this door with the click of a mouse. Beyond it is a world of sound, thought, and opinion. In-depth discussions of television's greatest blending of science, superstition, imagination, and you're invited along. We'll be talking Twilight Zone. Beyond it is a world of sound, thought, and opinion. In-depth discussions of television's blending of science, superstition, imagination. And you're invited along. We'll be talking Twilight Zone.
Yes, good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to Talking Twilight Zone. And I'm your host, Lynn, and I'm here with my co-hosts, Dave and Robert and Bobby. Hello, guys. How's everybody?
Howdy.
Cheers. Fine, thanks.
Good.
Hot.
It's supposed to be 90 over the weekend, too. I think Monday it's supposed to be 90. And I think
95 by Wednesday.
Wow. Wow. And Rick, welcome to our always welcome and very special guest, Rick Wall.
Hello.
Yeah, it's supposed to get up there in the 90s. That's fine with me. I don't want summer to end, so I'm very happy about that. I don't care. I'll put
remember the old Johnny Carson, how he would always do the how hot it is ones?
How hot is it?
Here we go.
Okay, I'll tell you, it was really hot today.
It
was worth the trip in, wasn't it? Just it was. It was so hot today. I saw a robin dipping his worm in nest tea. It was so hot today. I saw a pigeon walking in the shadow of Orson Welles. It was so hot today that Burger King was singing, "If you want it your way, cook it yourself."
That's how hot it is here in Ohio.
Love Johnny Carson. Miss that guy. He was awesome. Yes. Well, I do want to wish
everyone...
I think
that's copyright infringement, isn't it?
excuse me, how many years have we done this show that we kind of hit the fringe?
Yeah, exactly. Well, I do want to wish everyone a very happy Labor Day weekend. I hope everyone has a good one.
Put your pickaxes down and take a rest.
Why do they call it Labor Day when nobody's working? It should be called non-Labor Day.
That's right. I agree with that. I do agree with that.
Yeah, Dave, how's that banker holiday work when the banks aren't actually working?
We've got no imagination here, that's why.
Nobody's
well,
laboring.
It used to be called the Armistice Day, isn't it? Or was that Memorial
Day?
Yeah,
Armistice Day, yeah, it was. Maybe that was Memorial Day. Maybe that was, yeah. I think Labor Day was always Labor Day.
I'm surprised they didn't take off for Arbor Day. Shoot, pick out a day and give us a day off.
An awful lot of holidays that nobody even gets off for. Arbor Day and, you know, and Groundhog Day. Nobody gets off for Groundhog Day.
I see my shadow all the time and
that's right.
See me go hiding.
Start the show before I fall asleep. I'm getting older by the minute.
And
there's always room for one more, Robert.
Room for one more, honey.
One more, honey.
And thanks for that opening. Very good opening, as always. Appreciate that.
No problem.
And today we are talking about Season 5's Ring-A-Ding Girl. And, Robert, why don't you play us an opening clip there?
Okay.
And now, Mr. Serling.
Introduction to Bunny Blake, occupation film actress, residence Hollywood, California, or anywhere in the world the cameras happen to be grinding. Bunny Blake is a public figure. What she wears, eats, thinks, says is news. But underneath the glamour, the makeup, the publicity, the buildup, the costuming, is a flesh and blood person, a beautiful girl about to take a long and bizarre journey into the Twilight Zone.
Yes, indeed. Ring-A-Ding Girl. Okay, well, that's one of the Season 5 offerings, and it's about a woman named Bunny Blake. She's a movie star, and her hometown fan club sent her a magic ring. And in this ring, she sees the faces of her friends and her family, and in those images, they're begging her to come home to the hometown where she grew up, which is called Howardville. And, you know, although she's been hired to make a movie in Rome, Bunny decides to return to Howardville so she can spend some quality time with her sister Hildy and her nephew Bud. Of course, the annual picnic is also on that day. She then tries to get the event postponed, but she can't. So at the last minute, she arranges a one-woman show at the high school auditorium. Now, all the while this is going on, she hears thunder outside and she sees crystal ball-like images in the ring, and they're showing the jetliner encountering severe weather. Then it starts to rain. So Hildy, her sister, accuses Bunny of showing off by announcing her one-woman show so suddenly and thereby forcing the town to choose between seeing her or going to the traditional Founders Day picnic. So Hildy tells her, she says, well, I'm going to the picnic, and so is Bud because, you know, I'm in charge of the food, and Bud's going to be a lifeguard, and they're going to the picnic, and that's that. But then she does end up changing her mind and agrees to go to Bunny's show instead. So as they're all about to leave for the performance, Bunny finally sees herself in the ring on the doomed jetliner. She then realizes that her mission is completed. She thanks her somewhat bewildered sister in a sort of a goodbye gesture. And then a breaking news flash comes on the radio. And while Bunny's sister and nephew are listening to the first reports of the jetliner crash, Bunny says a final goodbye, which they actually don't hear, and then she goes outside in the rain and disappears. And just then a police officer calls the house to inform Hildy that Bunny is among the dead passengers on the plane. Hildy doesn't believe her, or believe him, because she said, well, Bunny was right here. She was right here with us. But the news anchor confirms that Bunny was indeed on the plane, and he also states that several townspeople saw her that day as well. The anchorman notes that since all the townspeople were in the auditorium waiting to see Bunny's concert, their lives were saved since they weren't at the picnic grounds where the jetliner crashed. So Bunny really was only in Howardsville in spirit through the magic of the ring while her real body was on the plane. And the newscaster then adds, until the mystery is unraveled, only one thing is certain, Bunny Blake is dead. And the final scene shows Hildy finding Bunny's magic ring, which had fallen to the floor, but now it's chipped and charred, presumably because of the fiery plane crash. So,
yeah, we get appearance by Fred Zippel himself. Well, actually, the
yes,
actor that
do.
Plays him.
Yeah. Arnold's father. Yeah, Arnold the pig. Arnold the pig's father. So Bunny Blake's fan club, they sent her this haunted ring, and, you know, I suppose that can be considered a pretty unique gift because Bunny loved it. She obviously was very spoiled, and she was a little bit conceited as a movie star, and she adored shiny baubles, so she loved the ring. Only problem was once she put it on her finger, she sees these images of the friends and family, and they're begging her to come home. So she goes off to Howardville, and, of course, we don't know where Howardville is because the state's never mentioned. It's probably someplace like North Carolina or Iowa or some Midwestern state, and it just seemed that way. But she goes home, and everybody's thrilled to see her, but then she, you know, she wants them to blow off the Founders Day picnic to go see her perform. And, you know, it would sound to anybody like she's really stuck on herself, except that she knows the tragedy will strike and they'll all die if they go to the picnic. So, you know, that she actually had good intentions there. But, I don't know. I'm not sure, though, that I'm the only person who found her character to be totally obnoxious and irritating, though. I thought she was a little irritating. But the character of Bud, the nephew, he was just as annoying in a different way. He sort of reminded me of a small-town cliché, a cross between Ronnie Howard's Richie Cunningham on Happy Days and Tony Dow's Wally Cleaver on Leave it to Beaver. So, anyway, it turned...
Golly, Wally.
So it turned out Bunny saved the town, or maybe they were all just smart enough to come in out of the rain. Who knows? But magic ring. I thought that was a nice touch. And it actually made me think of the crystal ball in The Wizard of Oz when Annie M. was calling to Dorothy to come home. And it just reminded me so much of that. And I wondered if the people from Bunny's fan club who sent it to her knew of its magical powers. And maybe they didn't even know.
It must have been connected to the subconscious. That's the only thing I can think of, because a lot of them, I don't think, remember even saying for her to come home. I think maybe the ring was telepathically maybe picking them up as asking
and
her.
She had some premonition or something, yeah.
Yeah.
Because her fan club couldn't have known that. I mean, they just sent her a ring and, you know, it worked magic for her. And I like the images, the illusions that the ring projected, especially the airplane. And also the scene at the end when Bunny walks out in the rain and then she vanishes. That was kind of a haunting image, you know, her just vanishing into nothing. And there were a few people in this episode who were in previous zones. Bing Russell, who's Kurt Russell's father, played the TV news personality. And he appeared in season 3's The Arrival. And we have George Mitchell, who played Dr. Floyd. He was in The Hitchhiker. And he was also in Execution and Jess Bell. And Hank Patterson, who played Mr. Gentry, was in season 3's Kick the Can. But I didn't think this was a great episode, but it was decent. I mean, the acting was okay. The overall story wasn't bad. It had some holes in it, but I'll give it a 2 for average. Yeah, I didn't think it was that bad. So I will turn it over to you, Robert.
Okay, thank you, Lynn. For me, I just felt it was an okay story. It was more of a character piece with a Twilight Zone element thrown in, which is the ring itself. Now, depending on how you look at this, the ring itself was a cursed object, but, I mean, in a sense, it saved the people of the town. I mean, it may have been a curse for Bunny, but it was, you know, salvation for the people it saved. So I guess you could look at that either way. But the ring itself was able to protect her and her family and townspeople. You know, she was still bored on the plane. She pretty much projected herself, you know, because at the time she was on the plane, evidently the ring allowed her to project her image. And it's neat that she was able to still walk and talk among the people of the town. I mean, it wasn't like a hologram where, you know, you didn't have no substance. You know, she had substance there. So maybe that was her spirit that was there in the town at that time. But, you know, we are saved, you know, by the devastation of the airplane crash, or as I would say, the budget of the episode. Kind of, you know, it's easier just to put someone in a phone booth saying, well, body's dead. And hence, you don't see no piece
exactly.
of paint or nothing, yeah. But I would have rather seen that, though. So, you know, I was kind of a bit disappointed by that. I don't think everybody...
They never give you the big blockbuster scenes, you know. They always have to get around them because of the budget.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, it would be nice to see a wheel or a piece of plane or, you know.
Yeah, some fuselage,
like
yeah.
Yeah, just a little something to show that there was
exactly.
an accident there. I don't believe everybody was saved. I mean, there had to have been some casualties out of all that because...
yeah, everybody in the plane.
Yeah. But, I mean, on the ground, I think there had to have been someone killed or something like that. It just,
even if they had gone to the picnic in spite of the rain and it started to rain, they probably would have gone to their cars or something.
Or
so
the
they still would have been killed when the plane crashed anyway.
Yeah.
Just the believability. I think that's where I differ with everybody, just the believability of this episode. I mean, if it wasn't for the ring element, this wouldn't have been a Twilight Zone episode. I mean, because that's the whole thing, given the build for, you know, Bunny to be there.
Well, you know, in a way, I agree, though. It is hard to believe that every single inhabitant of that town was at that picnic, and every single person in that town went to that auditorium. I mean, yeah, that you're right. I agree with that. I mean, not one single person, I mean, unless that town's like a town of 300 people or something, you know, every single person that lived in that town was not anywhere near the grounds.
And if she's as spoiled, you say, not every townsfolk would be behind her. There'd
yeah.
be ones that'd be defiant. Well, she's disturbing our picnic. I ain't going to go to that.
There is precedence of that. Or whole towns going to one spot and whatnot.
Yeah.
I give you Penn State on a Saturday afternoon. There is a football game. Every store in the town has a sign going to the game.
Well, yeah, you do have a point there. That is true about Penn
State.
There
are 50,000 people in the stands. About 65% of them are the town.
That's true. That is true about Penn State. All the stores closed down and everything.
Yeah. But
there's got to be at least two people that don't go.
Yeah, I'm a Purdue fan, and I live in Penn.
That's got to be one store, Rick, that stays open. One.
No. Trust me.
Nobody can get a slice of pizza of the place.
No. You want to eat lunch, you go to the stadium.
They got to have their whiteout. They got to have enough people to do the whiteout there in the stadium. So.
That's true.
But, you know, this does remind me, if you remember Pet Sematary, remember the jogger that was hit and his spirit kept coming back to the doctor, the main character of the story, and remind him about the Pet Sematary situation?
Yeah, the Stephen King movie, yeah.
Metcalf played the main character. Randall, or I just can't remember what his character's name was.
Yeah, I forget. It's been a while since I've seen it.
Also, he very much reminded me of the Destination, Final Destination movie, too, about cheating death. You know, but even though she dies in the end on this one, but I go to 1.5 out of 5. That's pretty much how I rated this episode.
Okay.
Bobby,
oh,
throw it over to you.
Before you go, I just want to welcome Felix. Hi, Felix. So glad you're here.
Hi, Felix.
Yeah, good to see you again. Okay, Bobby.
All right. I'd like to keep my reputation going and give this a 0 and complain about it like I usually do, but actually, it's really not all that bad a story. at least by season five standards anyway. And that's the problem with a season like this. Stories that are in reality pretty weak begin to take on a better look than they deserve. By comparison, that makes it tough to rate it fairly because you're always thinking there are worse stories out there. I agree with Robert. It's too much talk and really not much action in it. And I agree with Lynn that it features a rather overbearing main character who is hard to sympathize with. But compared to the last one we discussed with that crazy old coot who was obsessed with that clock, it is at least a story, not just a character study. And it is fairly creepy, quite frankly. And like just about every other season five episode, once again, it's pretty derivative of the former story. And this is nothing new in this season. The well is dry, and they keep going back to the past for new ideas. I'm afraid the only truly original story we have to look forward to is Come Wonder With Me.
Oh, be
that's
quiet.
A true original, as Lynn knows.
Shut up.
This story can't help but remind, at least me, of the episode 22, where that woman who's in the hospital keeps being taunted by that creepy nurse telling her, "Room for one more, honey." The two stories are similar, except they both involve women who are almost doomed to die in plane crashes, except in 22, the woman doesn't get on the plane, so she survives, and in this case, she is on the plane and she dies. But it's a similar kind of story. It's not far from that other one, and we see that over and over and over again. Of course, it's a fictional story, and it has a tragic ending, and it is interesting, but it would have been more interesting to see a story about Maggie McNamara, her real-life story, which was far more interesting and much more tragic. Long before she appeared on The Twilight Zone, all the way back in the early 50s, she had quite a promising career ahead of her. She started out as a model and even appeared twice on the cover of Life magazine, no small accomplishment. Then she got into films, and she appeared in several very well-known films, like The Moon is Blue, where she was directed by Otto Preminger, and she was nominated for an Academy Award for that one. And later she appeared in several more famous movies, like Three Coins in a Fountain. However, despite her early success, like Robin Williams, she was doomed to come to a bad end, because she had long-time depression issues. And the following information is from IMDb and Wikipedia. Although McNamara's career started off well, she made only one more film. Part of the reason why her career stalled has been attributed to her refusal to move to Los Angeles. She also reportedly refused to do publicity for her films or pose for the cheesecake shots that studios generally expected their female stars to do in that era. Others have attributed her career troubles to emotional problems. After 1955, McNamara failed to secure any film or television work for the remainder of the decade. In 1963, she turned to television. She guest starred on an episode of Ben Casey and starred as the title character in the season 5 Twilight Zone episode, Ring-a-Ding Girl. Her last on-screen appearance was in July 64 on the Alfred Hitchcock Hour in an episode titled Body in the Barn. After her last on-screen role in 1964, McNamara fell out of public view for the remaining 15 years of her life, and she worked temporary jobs as a typist to support herself. I mean, we've heard of people in show business coming to a bad end, but for a woman who was nominated for an Academy Award to end up out of the business and working part-time as a typist is almost hard to imagine. Finally, on February 18, 1978, McNamara was found dead on the couch of her New York City apartment. She was only 48 years old. She had taken a deliberate overdose of sleeping pills and tranquilizers and left a suicide note on her piano. According to police reports, she had a history of mental illness, and friends reported that she had suffered from acute depression. Sounds familiar. A very sad ending for someone showing so much promise. As I said in my written review, ironically enough, it's too bad she didn't have one of those rings. in her real life to warn her of the disaster ahead and the bad decisions she was making that caused her to take her own life. It's a more interesting story than this episode, but it really is very sad. It's too bad. That's a very bad come down for somebody who had a lot of promise. Anyway, I don't think it's a bad episode. It kept me awake and it kept my interest. There's a lot of problems with it. At IMDb, it gets a 7.8 rating out of 10, which is very high. But everybody, the 8 people who posted reviews all mentioned that it's questionable whether she really saved anybody's life because they wouldn't have been there at a picnic if it had rained. So, you know, I wonder why, whether it was advisable, really, to have the rainstorm be a part of it. I mean, planes don't have to be in a thunderstorm to crash. That kind of makes it look a little strange that the only way they would have been there is if the thunderstorms came up suddenly and nobody was prepared. So everybody questions whether or not she really saved anybody because you wouldn't expect there to be a picnic in that kind of weather. Anyway, like Lynn, I gave it a 2. It's average. It's not all that bad, but it's really nothing particularly memorable about it. Lynn?
You know what, Bobby?
What?
You know what was interesting was you brought out the movie The Moon is Blue.
Right.
There was a MASH episode last week.
Yeah, we were trying to get that.
Yeah, yep. And they ended up with State Fair, remember?
Yep.
And BJ.
Oh, yeah.
And Hawkeye was trying to get it to where, I guess it was a controversial movie back then. And
it was controversial because they talked about sex, and that was almost unheard of at that time, yeah.
Yeah, but they were thinking something else. So when they finally got the film, they were disappointed about it. So, yeah, I remember they had it on a MASH episode.
I remember that, yeah, and they even went to the place where the soldier keeps all the films, and they tried to bribe him because they wanted that movie so badly. Yeah, I remember that. The Moon is
Blue. So they told him to switch the labels, and they fooled themselves because they switched the label and they got State Fair instead. And they finally corrected it, and then they were all disappointed. So, yeah.
And then even announces who was a Potter. Even announces, we have a real special treat for you. The Moon is Blue, and everybody's, you know, clapping and cheering, and then State Fair comes on. Our State Fair is a wonderful fair.
Yeah, that was great.
I love this.
But it did show a scene from that film at the end where they're standing by a car, and it's raining or whatever, I think it was. So that's why that was ironic that you mentioned that movie, Bobby.
Okay.
Okay, Dave?
Yeah, it was quite a reasonable episode. It was a small cast, but mostly competent. And Lynn and Bobby have covered the backgrounds of those. The only one that I really noted and thought that's a familiar face was the older lady that's a companion that gives her the present before she leaves, who is on the plane with her. The actress Betty Lou Gerson, I think.
Betty Lou Gerson,
I mean, I'm not sure that I remember her from Perry Mason, but her face seemed more familiar than most of the others in it. But that acting, I thought, was rather good. In some sense, by the way, this is season 5, as we know, episode 133, first aired 27th of December 1963. It's a pretty depressing story to have, you know, just after Christmas. But there you go. It was a little bit of a twist, I thought, on the sort of cry wolf theme. You know, the story that, you know, the boy keeps saying things and each time it's false. So when there really is a disaster, nobody believes him. Well, it was a sort of twist on that in as much as people thought she was, spoiled actress. And, if she had a whim and she wanted to do something, that why should they change their plans just because she says she wants to do something? And, of course, she wasn't. Certainly early on in the story, as far as we the viewer were aware, she wasn't sure of what her premonition was. It was being passed off as a premonition to us in the story. So they thought she was just being, you know, Hollywood person swatting in and trying to mess up their arrangements. So that was that. One thing that amused me was the fact that when the sister called in the doctor to examine her I thought it was rather good that he's very concerned about her, you know, burning the candle at both ends. She's tired, she needs to rest. Not a murmur, not a mention of the fact she lights up a cigarette while she's doing the thing. Now, you could argue that's to do with, at that stage, you know, in that time, people didn't question people smoking. But you could be cynical and say, well, maybe it's because they had a cigarette sponsor for the TV series. But it did seem funny to me that, you know, she's lighting up there and the doctor said, no, I'm sorry. It wouldn't have been irresponsible to the sponsors, I think, if the doctor had said something like, no, I know smoking's fine, but I'd rather you just, knock them on the head for a few days, you know, without implying that they actually give you anything nasty. But obviously this steered completely away around that.
Yes, it would.
Would it?
The sponsor would object to that. Yes, they would. And they told the sponsorship, no. Everybody, it's the 1960s. Everybody's smoking. It's perfectly all right.
Shoot, game shows gave packs their
and Rod,
cigarettes away.
And Rod did not believe the medical reports. And to be honest with you, a lot of them, I don't either. But...
Yeah, you're quite right. I did say I didn't know which it was, whether it was the fact that that was normal for the day. I mean, I shouldn't, in one sense, bring it up because I've always said that I try and view these things at the time they were watched. So,
well,
I mean,
like it seemed like every television show you watched back then, people were smoking. I Love Lucy, they were always lighting up cigarettes. And,
I absolutely understood that. You just thought. Even then, a doctor would have said, you know, just ease off on them for a while. Or they might even said, even if it was a whiskey sponsor, they might have said, no, perhaps they wouldn't. Anyway, the point was,
they consider it cool, Dave. So.
I think you're right. The fact that they got a clean sweep and again, you know, nobody apparently was at this thing. Now, you could put it down to the sudden thunderstorm, which I think Bobby's absolutely right. That completely undercut the thing, because there was a practical reason why they didn't go, irrespective of what she said. You could argue, of course, she appeared on local TV. This is a time, presumably, when people actually watch their local TV station, because she turns the TV on and she doesn't have to switch from... I mean, I can't remember which channel Twilight Zone was first aired on. Can you guys? I mean,
CBS.
So they missed a trick there, didn't they? Her TV should have come onto the CBS logo, and then she had to turn to the local station. They missed a trick there. but the other thing was, people said they were surprised that nobody on the ground was hurt. Well, don't forget, as the way the story played out for us watching, her own sister and nephew hadn't yet left to go to the picnic. And she'd already stated, if you remember, when her sister said, I'm doing that. And she said, well, why are you doing that when you know it's the fair? And she said to her sister, well, I know you're my sister, but me and the nephew are still going to the event. The
luncheon. But they had things to do there, yeah.
But they hadn't yet left for it. So perhaps the crash actually happened before most people had got there, or they were waiting to see if the rain eased off or whatever. So it did sort of undercut that somewhat.
Just this once, Rose. Everybody lives. Well, I
had
there.
Yeah. So I think this sort of, I think this the script could have been slightly, made that a little bit better. I like the reference that Bobby said about 22. I put the link in there to that as well. That was that. So yeah, what was it? It was a fairly run of the mill story. It was reasonably well done. I think you're right, Lynn. The special effects were probably above par for the standard of the show as we've been watching. Yeah. So I suppose I'll give it a solid 2. I can't push it beyond 2, but it's a solid 2, I think.
Okay, good. Okay, great. All right, Rick.
All right. Just a little aside, how do I know about State College, Pennsylvania? My sister lives there.
Yeah.
And I've been
to
many
states. You're not very far away. You're not too far from it.
Anywho, about 6-8 hours, depending on traffic. Anyway, yesterday is precedent of people not getting hurt in plane crashes on the ground. I give you Flight 800 that crashed off a beach on Long Island here. There were people on the beach. Not one of them got hurt when the plane crashed. Also, here in Huntington, there was a 747 that crashed into Jimmy Connors' parents' tennis court. People were home around it, and Jimmy Connors' family was, mother and father were home. Not one person was killed on the ground.
Well, Rick, it makes you wonder, was this pilot trying to avoid where it was going to crash? I mean, remember the Hudson?
Good point.
Crash? Yeah, where they landed, Sully landed the plane in the Hudson and
right.
Killed that one, yeah.
But no, I mean, the people, like the Flight 800, everybody died on it. I don't know how many people died in the crash in the Connors tennis court. But as far as I know, like I said, neither incident, nobody on the ground, I mean, was hurt. It was just basically the planes. But anyway, getting back to the episode, knowing and working with actors and actresses and having a friend whose father was an actor who I've known for 42 years, my friend, not the actor. That's a pretty good portrayal of actors, to be honest with you, and actresses. But, the story was all right. I'd probably give it a 3. Oh, and by the way, Robert, rings that help you are not considered cursed. Or objects that you aren't considered cursed.
That's what I wonder.
Curse means bad.
Well, it was bad for her. She didn't live, unfortunately.
By the way, can I just ask about that? They showed a close-up of the ring when the sister picked it off the carpet at the end. And to me, it looked as though it had gone marbled. It looked different. Does that mean it had lost its power some point?
No, it was
involved in the accident.
In the plane crash, the fiery crash.
Yeah, burned up.
Brilliant. Yeah. I think I didn't make that connection. Well done, guys.
It was charged.
And also one more thing. Loyalist? Is that a word?
What is it?
Loyalist, yeah.
Yeah.
I think.
By loyalist.
Like loyalty.
Loyalist,
something
yeah.
Like that.
Loyalist, yeah.
I don't know. It sounds more like something left over from the Revolutionary War. You know, the loyalists that were working for the Brits or rooting for the Brits and us.
Well, there was a party. There was a loyalist party, like the Democrats. There was a loyalist party, I think.
Mm-hmm.
They were called the Loyalists, yeah. I don't know how long they lasted, but that's what they were called.
Are you saying, Rick, that the Britons were considered Loyalists?
Yeah, and we were the rebels.
Because I remember they got the Haitians and others involved during the Revolutionary War as well, too. And I think the Haitians were German, weren't they?
Haitians, yeah, and they were allies of the Brits. Or actually,
oh, yeah.
Mercenaries for the Brits, mm-hmm. actually. They were being paid, I believe, by Britain.
Wow. I just think this was too much of a character piece story. It just didn't grab me. And as I said, if it wasn't for the ring being a part of the story, it really wouldn't have been a Twilight Zone. I refer to the Twilight Zone, Rick, as being a morality situation anyway with the series, so.
Right.
And if it's not a cursed object, I would think it's an enchanted object, right?
Yeah, best word for it.
I guess enchanted. Magical. Yeah, magical or enchanted, something like that.
Yeah.
Well, that's why I threw crystal ball in there, because the ring itself has a crystal on top, which is showing her the future, or possible futures, so to say.
Or an alternate present, because she was both in the town and on the plane. So it's an alternate present, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. Yeah.
Because she left her fur coat behind, didn't she, for her sister?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, at the end, yeah.
Weird.
I said it reminded me of the crystal ball in The Wizard of Oz.
Oh, sliding doors then.
Yeah. Cleopatra. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, sorry, Rick. Well,
that's all right, Dick.
Okay, well, we have a three, and we have three twos, and we have a one and a half.
I'm not sure whether Rick Wall's actually finished, because we sort of butted in there.
Oh, I'm sorry, Rick. I'm so sorry.
No, I was done.
Okay.
You sure?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, then you gave it a three, right?
Yeah.
Okay, a three, and three twos, and a one and a half, so we're kind of across the board on that. That's cool. All right. So that takes care of this episode, and then 2 weeks from now, what is the date? 13.
You Drive, that'll be the episode.
You Drive, right, yeah.
You Drive.
Yeah. You Drive.
You Drive.
You Drive.
You Drive.
Christine's forefather, so to say.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah.
The 13th of September.
My mother, the car or whatever.
Oh, wow. You're going way back.
Car 54. Oh, no, wrong thing.
Where are you? Okay, well, that'll be 2 weeks from now on September 13th, and that'll be You Drive. And I wanted to say something about that episode. Oh, yeah, the guy who stars in that episode, he was in something else, another Twilight Zone. I can't remember which one. But anyway.
Yeah, he's the one that played the kind of the nosy body on the planet.
Yes, third from the sun.
Sun, yeah.
That's right. Yeah, he was in that. Yeah, so
what
he'll be.
Felix rate it, by the way, or didn't he put it in?
Felix said he's not giving this one a rating because he doesn't remember it. He hasn't seen it yet. He's going to watch it tonight.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, he said he's going to watch it tonight. So, you have to show up then on the 13th, Felix, and tell us what your rating is. That's one way to get you here. So you got to come and tell us what your rating was for this one and rate the next one, too. Okay, so we'll see you, everybody, in 2 weeks on the 13th of September for You Drive. And I hope everybody has a very dry and happy Labor Day weekend, rest of the Labor Day weekend, I should
say. Non-Labor Day.
Non-Labor Day weekend, right. Non-Labor Day weekend. No laboring this weekend. Okay, everybody. So that's it for us, and we'll see you in 2 weeks.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye, everybody. See you next time.
Bye-bye.
And now, Mr. Serling.
On Twilight Zone next time, again the services of Earl Hamner, Jr. In a strange story, a strange conclusion, and a very unusual brand of justice, dramatized in a show called You Drive. It's a story of a hit-and-run driver and a very special kind of an automobile. A consummately fine actor named Edward Andrews lives out a nightmare partly of his own making. On Twilight Zone, You Drive. I hope you're going to watch it with us.
Sit and gaze for days through sleepless dreams, all alone and trapped in time. all alone and trapped in time. I wonder what tomorrow has in mind for me, or am I even in its mind at all? Perhaps I'll get a chance to look ahead and see, soon as I find myself a crystal ball. Soon as I find myself a crystal ball. Well, tell me where I'm going. I don't know where I've been. Tell me, won't you tell me and then tell me again? My heart is breaking, my body's aching, and I don't know where to go. So tell me.